Hi everyone, and welcome to the Cover Mindset podcast from McGinley Coaching. I'm your host and founder, Laurie McGinley. Today we're joined by Chris Brindley. How are you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm great, Laurie. Good morning. Looking forward to this. Thank you for the invite.
Oh, no worries at all. Can you just tell the listeners about a background of yourself and the kind of the journey you've been on so far?
Yeah, I had a corporate career working. I worked for two banks and also a national energy company. My passion was always sport, and I realised that I was able to, through my coaching badges quite early on in my sporting career, I was able to apply a lot of the coaching principles in the workplace. So I didn't go to university, I'm not particularly academic, but what I did realise that the ability to coach and improve either individual and or team performance was something that I was good at and I enjoyed doing. So as a result of that, I became the managing director of a couple of banks, but I left all of that behind because I wanted to work in both business and sport. So since that time, I've had the privilege of working on the board of the Rugby Football League. I chaired the Rugby League World Cup 2021, and we steered that through a global pandemic. We had a postponement, and we delivered the biggest, the best, and the most inclusive Rugby League World Cup ever seen. So really proud of that in leading the team there. But I also work on the Elite Academy Management Programme for the Premier League, working with academy directors and looking not just at the football side, but more in particular, how to develop some of the business side with academy managers, because they've gone from, you know, being on the field an awful lot. Now they've got budgets to look at, they've got presentations to do, they've got other issues around safeguarding. So there's a lot more than just the coaching aspect to an elite academy manager's role now. Because of my business background, I'm able to support the academy managers. And I've also worked in various other businesses, both in sport, and I've got some directorships in traditional businesses at the moment as well to keep my hand in, so to speak, Laurie.
No, and got it. This is a Thursday morning. It's nearly weekend, so the voice is nearly gone by this week. But because the biggest thing I'm looking now is in football. It used to be, it's very much saturated now with kind of coaches, you know, with analysts, coaches, and everything. But the biggest thing that I'm starting to see now is the business side. You know, like the sporting directors, the academy directors, but also like head of operations. You know, particularly you start to see it now in the women's game a bit more. You know how the managing director is controlling a lot of the kind of the roles instead of having a sporting director as a managing director, and there's different titles. But just from your experiences, what does it take to kind of work your way up to the kind of the top of the top of the tree? Because you've got different kind of skill sets you're needed. But do you think having a coaching background, you know, is good? So therefore, you understand the foundations, and then go and fit in. You know, finding new information, you know, and studying, you know, like a master's or even online courses that are free, just so you can upgrade your CPD. So therefore, when it comes to this, like maybe interviews or speaking to the people in the kind of in the boardroom, you actually know what to say, because a lot of people really struggle when to keep quiet and when to, you know, go on the attack, as they say.
Yeah, I think there's a few things that there, Laurie, to explore. Firstly, I talk about leadership and break it down into three modules. The first one is lead self. If you get the ability to lead yourself, people will recognise that. And what does lead self look like? High levels of self-awareness, continual professional development, actively seeking feedback. You then start to think about other areas of how you might lead yourself. That might be the image you portray, as well as your performance, how well you network, so exposure to decision makers and influencers. That whole leading self, I think, is where the journey starts for leadership. So I don't think you need the word leader in your title. I think we all get to lead ourselves every day. And I think that's what a lot of people look at. Secondly, you get the opportunity to then lead others. And I think you're right, Laurie, it's a different skill set from leading yourself, because not everybody's the same, we're all different. So how do the best leaders? Well, they have vision, they have standards, they have structure, and often they explain why to people, using some of the science, Simon Sinek, circle tools. And they actually then get people to have pride in the badge. They have a common goal, common cause. And as a result of that, people start moving together in the same direction, doing the same things, looking after each other. And then the third bit, as you alluded to, is when you move up the leadership ladder, you don't often sort of get to work in and amongst people as much as you would have done previously. You get to work in boardrooms and meeting rooms and committees. And as a result of that, you need to learn then how to lead a business. So it's lead south, lead others, lead a business. And I think in modern day sport, the focus has often been a lot on field. I think there's a movement now to have a high level of professionalism off field. So if I take an example, if I go and speak to an academy director and talk about a pathway for a young athlete, a young player, they'll absolutely be able to tell me the pathway. They'll be able to tell me some of the milestones they're expecting and some of the key performance indicators. If I then go through the same club but go off field to, say, the commercial department and ask the commercial director to show me their succession plan or their pathway, it's just not there in many instances. So I think the answers often are in the club, but they're on field and they've just not been translated off field. And I think I've started to see a change in that, to giving more people more business acumen that is applicable in the sporting arena.
Yeah, because I was listening to a podcast last week. I was watching the Chelsea-Arsenal game, the Women's League Cup, and yeah. It's a person called Queenie Porter, and she talked about she's the managing director of WOW Hydrate, but she's also the vice president of West Ham Women, and she discusses the biggest thing is in the men's game that there's so much sponsorship and commercial, and it's very much, it's like a blur, you can't really see it. But in the women's game, you start to see the, you know, people are actually paying to get it advertised in the League Cup in the women's, you know, space, if that kind of makes sense. But yeah, you talk about the biggest thing is, you know, self-lead. We all lead ourselves to an extent because we want to improve ourselves every day, but the thing is, sometimes the biggest skill set is when we lead others. Other people want to, I was doing a course in leadership and motivation, and see if the team leader is negative or they're struggling, then the team starts to get negative, you know, and they're starting to maybe, they have their own ways. But having a clear path and a clear value is something that we try and focus on as a club, you just mentioned there. But do you think sometimes that the team leader, or let's say the team leader, but it's really the managing director, the person who controls things, is if they can lead other people to success, you know, then there's going to be more buy-in from, you know, other parts. So the commercial side, the football side, the other side of the all, basically the whole team. Do you think it's going to be a big thing now, you know, having that kind of skill set as a main director to lead other people, because there's going to be other people who want to succeed, but they might do it for their own self-lead, you know. But I'm just wondering how, because it's the biggest skill set now is communication with people, but it's sometimes a hindrance because you might not communicate the right thing to the right person.
Look, I think there's a couple of things again there, Laurie, to explore. Firstly, the leader sets the tone.
Yeah.
And I talk about a concept called windows and mirrors. And what do I mean by that? The very best leaders, when it goes well, they look out the window at all the people who've contributed to the success and make sure they get the due recognition and the due thanks. Because praise brings more of the same. So that's important. And then when it doesn't go well, the very best leaders look in the mirror and ask themselves a question. What could I have done better? The worst leaders, Laurie, have the opposite approach to windows and mirrors. When it goes wrong, and somebody says, whose fault is that? You look out the window and blame everybody else. And then when it goes well, they look in the mirror and say, aren't I great? And it's all about them.
Yeah.
So the leader sets the tone. You know, I've worked in businesses, and some of your listeners will recognise this, that when the leader walks in the morning, you don't know whether you're going to get kissed or kicked. That's a terrible environment. and a terrible indictment of leadership. So the leader sets the tone. The leader, I call him Rindy Allen. Sometimes the leader has to get wet to keep the team dry. Not the other way around. So I look at that and leadership. Communication's fascinating. And I was only looking at some material that I've read time and time again only this weekend by a guy called Alan Pease. And he talks about communication. It's A-L-L-A-N-P-E-A-S-E. An Australian expert in communication. But let's remember, communication isn't just words. Words are important. But tonality can often have an impact on people. And so can body language. And ultimately, communication means different things to different people. Again, the very best leaders take time to understand the best communication channel for individual athletes. The worst leaders have a one-size-fits-all approach. Like, you didn't play well, you're all getting a bollocking. The challenge with 11 players or a squad of 23, however many, is getting the bollocking all at once. Some will use that as a motivator. For others, it will absolutely destroy their confidence. So taking the time to work out how individuals respond and what's the best communication method, I think, is a sign of great leadership. Then to execute that. So I know some people like direct feedback, and I'm one of them. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd like the feedback, just tell me. Other people I know, if they receive direct feedback, actually it really impacts the confidence, so they probably then want specific details. They want maybe the balance between what's gone well is not what needs improving. And again, one of my favourite coaches of all time is Frank Dick, OBE. He was the athletics coach when UK and British athletics were at its very best. And I watched some of Frank's stuff, and it's just so powerful in terms of treating individuals like individuals, not having a one-size-fits-all approach. So understanding what words mean, it means different things to different people. So I think the best leaders I've worked with and seen, both in business and sport, Laurie, talk about contracting. So up front they say, what are the things I could do that could really damage our relationship? And then when the individual tells them, they make a real commitment never to go there because they know that it doesn't hit. And then they ask the question, what's the best three things that I could do that can get the best version of you, the best performance? And again, it's not assumed, it's not just guessed at. Actually, it's contracted. I'll tell you my three, you tell me your three. Let's make sure we look after each other. So I think communication, again, is an art. And if you're doing your leadership and motivation CPD, Laurie, it's great because more people should understand some of the science behind it rather than just go, well, this is the way I do it. Because I think trial and error can be avoided and stuff like this. There's a lot of academic rigour. And I talk about people doing academics, which is understanding the academic rigour, but then practically applying it in a way that suits the right environment in which you're operating in.
Yeah, well, definitely. Because I actually mentioned this before, when we were talking about the academic, you know, it's really interesting because I love when you look at coaching, you know, there's so much, coaching is such a general word now because you have to, when you're coaching, you could be coaching yourself, coaching the team, coaching upwards, downwards. But it's all about sometimes, like, I was really interested in that contracting because when you get to, I was watching the F1 Drive to Survive, and one of the team principals, you see them, it's all very much dramatised, a lot of it. But the one thing the guy said was, I love to micromanage people, but that's the thing I tell the staff before. But the reason why is because I've been an engineer, I've been an assistant, I've worked my way up, so I know that this team really likes to be micromanaged, but another team might be the complete opposite. But as you say, when you look at, like, in coaching, I've seen it, and you watch, a lot of people like to go in right away and set the authority, and sometimes it's actually the worst thing you could do, or the best thing. Again, it just depends on the person, you know, and who you're working with. But I'm looking at, see, you talked about the business side, you know, to, you know, lead a business, and that's the, we look at the business in football is huge now, you know, the commercial side, the other sides, you know, the sponsorships and the idea of how can we increase the, you know, attendance, you know, maybe the women's game. But from when you're leading a business, you know, obviously you have to answer to the fans, the stakeholders, and when things, because we talked about the art of communication in media, you know, it's one of them things of how do you try and convince yourself that you're actually good enough to go to that next level? Yeah. Because you look at I know in Germany, the sporting director does the press conferences, but in England, they don't. But it's starting to get more, you know, the training ground guru, they announce, obviously, a lot of there's a sporting directors, there's head of these. But do you think it's how do I put this nicely? A lot of ex-pros are getting a lot of big jobs, you know, for, you know, sporting directors, and it's great. But I think there's more of an open mind now of people who are not played the game, you know, maybe come from, they've got a coaching background, but they've went away and did like their CPD, their knowledge of building a business, leading a business, and going back into football, you know, maybe 5-6 years later, but having the knowledge to lead a business. Do you think some people can actually have that transferable skill now of going in, test football, doing the coaching, doing a little bit, know what it's like, ask questions, come back out of it, you know, do the due diligence, as they say, you know, the sponsor, and then going back in at a higher level?
I think there's lots of different routes, Laurie, to be honest. But you might not have to leave the sport particularly, but I think what you have to do is understand how high-performing organisations operate. And as I said, there's different ways of doing that. And if I look at the Elite Academy Managers programme that the Premier League run, and they run lots of different programmes, it's a wonderful programme to observe and be part of, because it is about giving people different skill sets for future opportunities. But I always talk around when I coach people about what are the future roles that you need, and how do you start to build the knowledge and the skill of the roles you want of the future. For a lot of people, just think by doing the job I'm doing now well is actually the answer. And it's not. Performance is so marginal across talented people that how do the best leaders select the next sporting director, manager, whatever you want to call it? And I'm always guided by a guy called Jack Welch. Jack Welch is the General Electric CEO, and he talked about a model called PIE, P-I-E. He said performance is not a differentiator when it comes to selecting people for big jobs. He said it's one of the factors. He said the other two factors are image. So if you've got good numbers, but your image is terrible, you're not a good team player, you don't keep time, you slag people off, you slag the company off, you lie, you cheat, you steal. If your numbers are good, but you've got that image, why would I employ you? So actually, I always look at somebody like Roger Federer and thought, Federer's just been one of the biggest contracts of his life at the end of his career. So they're not paying for his tennis performance. They're paying for the image that Federer would bring. And then the E stands for exposure to decision makers and influencers. Because many jobs, whether it's in business or sport, are not advertised. It's headhunters that might provide a long list and a short list. So ultimately, how do you network with people who will be selecting the next manager, sporting director, academy director, coach type stuff? And then how do you create a succession plan as an organisation to have people that you want? So I think there's different routes, but what's clear for me is just knowing football, if we use football as a single sport in isolation, will not get you to be the best of the best of the best, because the roles are different. You know, an academy director, as I said earlier, now will have to do some strategic planning. We'll have to recruit. How do you recruit? Do you recruit with psychometric profiling? Do you recruit against values? Do you recruit against technical skills? There's lots of things now that you consider recruiting against. And, you know, when you go back to the image bit, I know lots of clubs and heads of recruitment that, you know, look at your past social media posts.
Yeah.
because if your image is you've got a lot to say for yourself and you're not particularly well thought in your opinions, if I'm going to bring you to a club and give you a 3-year contract as a player or as a coach, and you go and put the brand reputation at risk, I'm probably not going to employ you.
Yeah.
So I think gone are the days where I'm just a good coach. Gets you the job. I think you do have to think about your pathway, just like you would an athlete, and think about your own journey and how you're going to build up your skills to get the job that you want in the future.
Oh, I totally agree, because I think there was I remember reading something about a manager, and he had like slides behind him of all the things that were said about him, and one of the things was said was actually one of the players said it about him, and he obviously never mentioned it, but you could tell the guy squirming in his seat, you know. But the thing is that person had a big influence on the team, so he tried to make it more, but it was a good psychological way of thinking of, do you know what, don't cross me, but also I'm going to make something lighthearted out of something that could potentially be serious. But image, the biggest thing now is probably, you look at, you see a lot of, the biggest part, as I say, is when we look at different parts of the football image, you know, as a coach, but also as a sporting director, you need to be, there's going to be times when things go tough, you know, when you have to deal with, you know, you look at like social media, you look at, you know, the media, the mainstream media, but also, you know, you've got maybe family, you know, who might be potentially looking at an opportunity to, you know, be jealous or some of that, you know, these things. But do you think from an image point of view, you know, you can change, you know, let's say you've done your due diligence, you've done your coaching badges, you've done quite a lot, maybe you stepped away from football, but just kind of, maybe going from full time to part time and maybe focusing family, and then, but you're still doing your reading, you're still doing your, you know, podcasts and different things, but your image is still reasonably high, but it's not as high as it was, you know, maybe because you've not in the limelight. Do you think like networking, going to events, just to make sure that you're still, I always think there was someone said to me, you should never be under the water, but you should never be surfing. You should just be in the kind of eyes, just so you know where everyone is, where the sharks are, or people, or the dolphins, whatever it is, but you still know what's happening, but you're still, you know that when an opportunity arises, you're ready for it. But it's just one of them things of sometimes your image or personality might be, you're a really energetic, very, you know, fast person, but the club wants someone different. But it's sometimes you go to the club that you have to change your personality to suit them, when sometimes it could be that could really hinder things, or is it good to have a waiting game, you know, and then look at other things?
Yeah, Laurie, a couple of things. Number one, I think always have a clear set of values as an individual.
Yeah.
And that's not about image. That's actually, what do I stand for? And whilst they'll be challenged, the minute they get compromised or snapped in bits, then I think you have a challenge with the organisation that you work for. So I only know the people that I've shared value. And I walk away from the job, and I have done. I walk away from clients, and I have done. That actually behave in a way that doesn't sit comfortably with my values. I think the bit about networking, I think, is really strong. I would encourage everybody to network, because I think life's a journey of learning. And by going to networking with people that you don't know, people perhaps that have a skill set that you admire that one day you'd want to develop. My experience is lots of people want to help, usually because somebody's helped them along the way.
Yeah.
But if you're not in the room, how can you get their help? So, you know, the fact that we connected on LinkedIn and you asked me to join the podcast, I'm always happy to help, because people have helped me. So being in the room, and I think just not networking with your mates that you know, because you can pick up with them any time. I'm a great believer in going to ask some set questions of people who I admire. How did you get here? What's their journey? Then I ask them, what are the barriers that they've encountered in getting to a role? And then I ask them, how did you overcome those barriers? and then ask them for three pieces of advice. I tend to work in threes, Laurie. And as a result of that, I plot the answers. And you know what I've found? That lots of successful people have used a similar piece of advice about hard work, resilience, continuing learning. Then we talked about the barriers that they've overcome, and they've often not got the jobs that they've applied for, but they've still had high belief in themselves. Then the barriers, you know, others can be sort of, they didn't like my face, I went to the wrong school and all that, but you know what, they just turn around and says, that wasn't for me. And then eventually when you plot the answers, you realise that there's so much similarity, you almost find a success formula that the same people have got. But if you're not in the room networking, if you're not asking the question, you'll just sit there and you can read books, and books are helpful, but there's sometimes so much richness in having a conversation with someone. And it's a Chinese proverb that says, you know, an hour's conversation is often more insightful than 1,000 books.
No.
And therefore, I'd ask people to do that. And there's a book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And it's 70 years old, 80 years old. And that was around Napoleon Hill being asked by Andrew Carnegie to go and interview some of the most successful people in America to find out what made them successful. And what he realised was they all had very, very similar answers. And I've just picked up that principle, that concept. And that's what I do. I love meeting new people because I can learn new things. So I'd encourage everybody to network.
No, I agree. And I think it's the thing is, like, I like to, when I reach out to people, I've got, there's always, it's the thing I say, but you see, when you look for a podcast, it's the selfish side of the person, you know, if I think 100 listens great, if 1,000 listens great, you know, but the only person I'm listening to is you at the moment, so I'm actually writing all this information down so I can go and explore it. But the biggest thing is, like, someone talked to me about, you need to be a very good generalist, a specialist, you know, try and learn different ideas. But if you wanted to go into operations, go and speak to the, like, a hotel manager, go and speak to different people that are going to help you, because football is great, but what if you're struggling with a problem that you don't know the answer to? Well, this person who's works as a, you know, in the, like an Asda or a Tesco, like an operational manager, because they need to deal with stress in a different way, you know, like profit. But we talked about three things there. I was just wondering, the last kind of question on this is, what three bits of advice would you give someone who's maybe at a crossroads, they're maybe struggling to know what they want to do, but maybe they've got the knowledge a little bit, they've got the experience, but they're just struggling a little bit when it comes to kind of decision making?
I think there's so much information out there, a lot of people try and use all the information and get thoroughly overwhelmed. So I talk about carrying models around with me, Laurie, just like a golfer would have golf clubs, just like the engineers at British Gas where I worked had a toolkit. And actually, it doesn't matter which brand's on it, it's actually what does the tool do and can I master the tool? So I look at things around business, for example. My preferred method is the balanced business scorecard. It talks about always keeping an eye on the financials, but make sure that you have a good understanding of internal quality, and that is operations, that's risk. Then make sure you never lose sight of your customers or your clients. So what measures would you have, and how would you find out if you were growing your client base, whether that's through revenue or whether that's through volume, the number of clients, the satisfaction and unsatisfaction through Net Promoter Score. And then never forget that every business I've ever worked in is a people business. So what are your people measures? How do you look after your people? How do you engage your people? So, and we talk about coaching. There are so many coaching models out there, Laurie. You could spend a lifetime trying to read every coaching model. I've decided for me that the model I use is from John Whitmore, and it's known as the Grey Model. So whenever I'm coaching anybody, on field or off field, I just use the Grey Model, and I've mastered it. And the G stands for what's the goal? So I ask people, what is it you want to achieve? The R stands for the reality of where you are now. And the difference between where you are now and where you want to be is known as the performance gap. So we agree that you want to achieve your goal, I want to help you, we know where we are now. The O then stands for, so what are the options to get us from where we are now to where we want to be? And if I was working with a high jumper and they wanted to win a medal in Los Angeles in 2028, and they needed to jump 8 centimetres higher in the next 4 years, right, we'd break that down into bite-sized chunks, 2 centimetres a year, 1 centimetre every 6 months, 0.5 centimetre every 3 months, and then we ask the question, how might we go about executing that plan? Never lose sight of the goal, we'll break it down into bite-sized chunks. And then the W in the goal model stands for the will. What's the level of desire the athlete has? What are they prepared to do to make it happen? Are they prepared to get up earlier and do some more training? Are they prepared to go and fly halfway around the world to a training camp? When are you going to do it? What's going to get in the way? What techniques have you got for overcoming it? So my tip is always pick a model that works for you, that works in the environment that you're going to operate in, and master that model. And there's a great book by Matthew Syed called Bounce.
Yeah.
And it talks about mastery. So don't try and know a little bit about bouncing the truth. Just pick the 14 or 15 tools that you know will work for you, and you master those tools. So communication's one of them. Having difficult conversations is another tool. Might not, and prefer never to use it, but Laurie, I need to know how to use it. I talk about motivation. I talk about action planning and breaking things down and how to use a Gantt chart. And that's my preferred tool for project management. It's a Gantt chart. It works for me and I can communicate it effectively to others. And it's simpler to understand. So my advice would be, try not to boil the ocean, because it's pretty difficult, right? Boil the kettle, which is know what you've got and know how to do it. And funnily enough, your consistency of using the tools will get you an image of they are very consistent in their performance, in their language, and the tools that they use. Therefore, people will want consistency in their business.
Brilliant, brilliant way to finish. Thanks again, Chris.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you for the invite, and happy to help and keep in touch.